Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and New Hampshire School Administrators Association, representing school superintendents and administrators, championing the education of children in our state every day since 1941. In today's ever-changing world, public education matters, and so does its leaders. Online at nhsaa.org.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Not that long ago, a movie was something you saw in a theater. It was usually made by a major production company and was only available for home rental many months after release in cinemas. Today, that world has changed dramatically due to subscription streaming services like Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, and others. Some of these began as simple distributors of what the established movie houses had produced. Now, though, they're making films of their own and winning critical acclaim while distributing more foreign language, independent, and documentary short films to broader audiences. And this month, with the Oscar nominations in, it's clear that the newcomers are influencing the old guard and shaking up the business for producers and viewers alike. Today in The Exchange, movies in the age of streaming. Let's hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or call in 1-800-892-6477. With me in studio, Amy Diaz. She's editor of the Hippo Press and its movie reviewer. Amy, thank you very much for being here. It's great to see you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And also with us, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. Tom formerly worked in the film and comic book industry. And Tom, a big welcome back to you, too. Thanks, Laura.
Always good to be here.
So, Tom, just remind us real quick before we get into all of what's going on. Now, how did streaming get started? Because it's worth remembering that it hasn't really been common for that long.
Sure. I think I'd equate it in many respects to the origination of the cable industry, cable television, because it's about seeking out new viewers. And cable was there because if you couldn't get broadcast television, they would draw cable to you. I think streaming really became an opportunity to get, and let's face it, Hollywood, I always say Hollywood is about one thing, and that's money. Not to be negative, but it really is. And so the question became, how do you get these viewers who don't go out to theaters very often and don't even get cable? And so as computers became more and more available and bandwidth became more available, you were able to download videos because there's so much information and data in just a video image that streaming became more popular. And I think actually starting, Netflix is always the one we think about, maybe 10, 15 years ago when you could order online, but they would send you a DVD through the mail. You pay, what, $20 a month, and you get three videos at any one time.
It was almost like a library
service.
You know, you'd order it, and then they'd send it to you, and then, you know, after a couple of days, you have to send it back.
Sure, and, you know, it depended
on... A physical thing.
Where they got their money was, oh, people would forget it, they'd lose them and stuff, and then they'd have to buy them. But if you were good about it, yeah, you could watch all sorts of movies, and you'd have essentially pretty much any major film that was available you could watch. And so as bandwidth became more available, that the opportunity to actually order films and have them delivered by mail, and as we've seen, unfortunately, the death of video stores, bandwidth really and streaming really kind of brought that about. And so it's an opportunity for video anywhere you can get an internet signal. You can watch movies these days.
So now, again, for the uninitiated, Netflix is the sort of big granddaddy.
Sure.
in this arena. But who else is big in streaming, Tom? And who are some of the newcomers?
Sure.
Because now it seems like everybody's getting it.
Right. Netflix is the one. They're the elephant in the room that takes over everything. Hulu is pretty big. You'll find CBS is making a big venue, particularly with some of their new TV shows like Star Trek Discovery. And I think, and we'll talk later on about why streaming has become so successful, I think. But you'll hear about Sling. YouTube is actually doing a lot, not just on their video services, but as a streaming service. And so there's all sorts of opportunities for lots of new media available. And if you're interested, not just in mainstream Hollywood cinemas, I think there's a either a streaming service or a topic out there for you.
Well, and a little bit later, we'll talk about the cost and how many streaming services can one person subscribe to. But for now, just in terms of content, Amy, how do you see streaming changing the movie industry?
Well, I think especially, you know, this time of year for me, this is really when I turn to these streaming services because I am looking for the movies, you know, that have been nominated for Oscars that maybe I missed seeing, or especially documentaries and foreign films, a lot of the shorts. And this is what really seems to gravitate towards a lot of these streaming services, particularly Netflix. This is, you know, you can find lots of documentaries. If you get into document this year's nominated, you can look back at last year's nominated documentaries. And then you maybe find some smaller films. Romantic comedies seem to have had their comeback on Netflix primarily. And then I looked on both Netflix and Hulu, and you see a good amount of horror movies. And I don't know if it's like these are smaller genres, and so they find their audience out there, you know, in the streaming world. But, you know, yeah, I think especially romantic comedies, horrors, documentaries, and then some of the harder to find films maybe at bigger theaters.
Well, that's what's nice for us living here in New Hampshire, right, Amy? I mean, used to be if you wanted to see a cool foreign film or you heard about this like niche documentary and you didn't live in Boston or New York, it wouldn't come to a theater in New Hampshire. So now you have, as a viewer, the opportunity to see a lot more interesting stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember not that long ago, movies would get nominated, especially in that foreign language film and documentary category. And you would hear about them during the nomination period and then never again.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you'd see a clip of the Oscars and you go, oh, that looks really good.
That looks great. But then you could never find it. You know, maybe it came somewhere for a week, you know, 6 months later. I remember one time in the middle of the summer driving like 40 minutes to see this movie that had been nominated. And I was so proud of myself. And I will say that is not something I could do now. I've got kids. There's no way I could just get out of the house on a Sunday to go see a movie with an hour long round trip, you know, to go see it. So it's great that these things are available, and they're available while you're thinking of them, while you're talking of them. You know, I was looking at most of the movies nominated this year are either available right now on whether it's on iTunes or Amazon, or I would say by March, pretty much all of them are going to be available to watch. So I think that's great. Now, when we're excited about them, we'll be able to see them.
What do you think, Tom, about that question? Just as a viewer, first of all, how has this streaming revolution changed what's made and how we watch?
Well, you seem to make reference to the fact that we live in the middle of nowhere.
Kind
of right. Well, you're up here in Concord. I'm down in Keene, which we may call the middle of nowhere. I love Keene. But again, Amy's right that you have the opportunity now, if as long as you're not on dial-up, and I don't think any of us is that slow anymore, hopefully, you've got such a variety of and a plethora of all sorts of libraries available to you that there's pretty much you can watch anything out there. Give it 6 months from the theater and you're going to be able to have a chance to watch it. I wanted to throw one more thing in there, and this isn't necessarily on topic, but not only does streaming allow us as viewers to be able to watch anything, it also provides a venue for filmmakers that they have a means of distribution now that they never had before.
Well, and so let's talk about that. So the wider opportunity that Amy described, but also how film producers then take advantage of that wider opportunity. So go ahead, Tom. I think
sure.
That's where you're going.
I think early on, and actually, strangely enough, my students have been able to take advantage of this. If you're a filmmaker, an independent filmmaker, and you've got a project that you've already created, it's about making that contact. But if you can approach a Netflix or an Amazon and say, look, I've got this film, I'll give it to you for free if you will just put it on air, then it's a great opportunity for independent filmmakers to at least get exposure. And that then, and if you're just thinking about the business prospect of it, can lead to, gee, Steven's sitting around watching Netflix and something comes up. Holy cow, I've never seen that before. Let's contact that filmmaker.
Wow.
And so it's a great opportunity, I think, for nascent filmmakers to get their media out there and hopefully get a start in the business.
So it's kind of like what we see in the music industry. The gatekeepers, you know, MGM and Sony and all those big movie production companies, don't necessarily have a lock on what gets seen anymore.
Absolutely. I think so.
Go ahead, Amy.
Well, and you know, one of the neat things, so recently there was the Sundance Film Festival, and a lot of the films, so you hear, that's another place where you hear about movies and then you don't get to see them for months and months. But there were movies that came out of there that are now going to go to streaming, and I don't know if all of them are going immediately to streaming or maybe into theaters and then streaming, but... for example, Mindy Kaling, who did The Mindy Project, a TV show, and she was also on The Office, she had a movie called Late Night, which also stars Emma Thompson. I guess it's a comedy about like a comedy late night show. And Amazon Studios picked that one up. So I don't know if that one will go into theaters first and then end up on Amazon. But, you know, it's another way that we'll be able to see those Sundance movies. There was a movie called Ask Dr. Ruth. I think that was a Sundance movie. I'm not sure. It's a documentary about Dr. Ruth Westheimer, and the trailer for that one actually had a trailer and it said coming soon only on Hulu. So, you know, some of these movies will be not long out of the festivals and we'll be able to see them out here in the non-festival universe.
So here's the flip side of what both of you talked about. You know, more different movies being produced, small movies, niche movies. Maybe you love foreign films. Now you can see them. And if you don't live in a major metropolitan area like New Hampshire, you know, you can see them. The flip side, though, Amy, and I think you know where I'm going to go with this, is I see movies advertised, you know, now available on Hulu, now available on Amazon. Check it out on Netflix. And I'm like, I don't want to subscribe to four or five or six different streaming services. I mean, A, it's expensive. B, I don't watch that much. So that seems to be the downside of this sort of niche streaming model that we're in.
It is, and there are so many movies that you miss because you didn't realize this thing was on Netflix. This is a TV show example, but there is an animated Trolls cartoon kind of, you know, off of the Trolls movies that I just sort of happened to find out about. My daughter loves Trolls. And so I was like, oh, that's great that it exists. I had no idea. I had never heard of that. And I think there are a lot of movies on Netflix. When I was preparing for this show, I was really digging around and I'm like, oh, wow, look, that's there. There's a comedy with Chevy Chase on Netflix. There are all these things that I kind of hadn't heard about. And I think a few of them bubble up and they get enough coverage that you know, through repetition, you hear about something like there's a horror movie on Netflix right now called Velvet Buzzsaw. And so I'd heard a little bit about that one. But, you know, a lot of these movies, they just sort of, there's so much that they sink and you don't always know that they're out there.
Well, and how much does it cost, Amy, to subscribe to, let's say, two or three subscription services per month? I mean, they're not giving you this content for free.
No, and you know, each of them, so maybe this one's only $9.99 and maybe that one's only, you know, $8.99.
Right.
But eventually you've at least equaled your cable bill and maybe you can't give up. My kids love, there's a lot of shows my kids love on cable. I haven't figured out how to replace them all on streaming services, so I can't give up on cable yet. So yeah, to add on these streaming services, that gets pricey.
What do you think, Tom?
I was going to say exactly the same thing. We used to be able to, or at least I used to be able to, take these off on my taxes, but can't quite do that anymore.
Oh,
but,
because you're a film professor.
Right, exactly. It was great. But you're right. You think about that. I'm not exactly sure how much Netflix is. My wife pays our bills. So, but as you say, if you're looking at, let's say Netflix is, even if it's only $10 a month, so that's the price of a film ticket. But if you keep adding them all up and you keep wanting to add, it does get to be $100, $150 a month for this. So eventually maybe we'll be talking about where all of this is going. I kind of have to wonder if there's going to be a company out there similar to the cable industry, which went out and said, okay, let's take all of these different channels that are available on satellite and bundle them together. I kind of have to wonder if there's going to be a venue where somebody is going to be able to make an agreement with Netflix and Hulu and CBS, and for one hopefully affordable package, you can get a wider selection.
Right, because you can't possibly subscribe to all of these. On the other hand, and this is maybe outside your purview, but I'll ask you anyway, I mean, if somebody did do that, you know, they might run into antitrust laws.
Oh,
it's
sure.
Too big. One communications company shouldn't own everything. But from the average viewer's perspective, sure. How many services can you subscribe to?
Yeah, and it's tough, and there aren't enough hours in the day. I've heard about a couple. There are a couple that are specifically geared towards sort of people really into film. MUBI, I think Criterion Collection is putting out like a new one. They sound great. When are these extra hours going to appear that you can watch all this stuff?
Our number here in the exchange for you to join us is 1-800-892-8255. 6477. As the Oscars roll around later this month, we're looking at streaming services like Netflix, which are making a bigger than ever impact on movies, on the awards season. We're going to talk about this year's most talked about films, who made them, and again, how this is all changing the way we watch and what is produced. Disruption in the movie industry is what we're looking at. Again, you can join us with your comments and questions. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. So, Amy, again, you're editor at the Hippo. You've long been the movie reviewer there. How has streaming changed your job?
Well, I would say particularly in times like this, and then maybe also in kind of the August, you know, after the big blockbusters of the summer, when I get the chance to go looking around for the smaller films. Okay, where are these, you know, smaller films that I've heard about, either things that I missed? And I will say I've noticed a shortening of the period. The indie film that came out in May is usually available somewhere out there on the internet by August. Usually it's like iTunes or you know, to rent off of Amazon or something like that. So it is easier to catch up quicker on a lot of those movies. And then, you know, now, as I'm looking back, either at Oscar-nominated films, there was a film on Netflix that I completely missed out on, but it was nominated for the Golden Globe Best Song. It's called Dumplin'. It stars Jennifer Aniston and Danielle McDonald. It's a little bit of a teen movie, a little bit of a rom-com. It uses a lot of Dolly Parton songs, which I think is fantastic. And so, like, because I saw that on the Golden Globes list, this was my chance to go back and find it and watch it.
So, you know, streaming helps you do your job more efficiently.
It does. It helps me find, especially, you know, those more limited release films.
Sure. So somebody sees it, you know, nominate for an Oscar, and they say, ooh, what's that? And now you can find it and tell them.
Exactly.
Even if you can't.
And you know, that's what I think is great about awards season. There are lots to complain about, but it does give you a list to start from, you know, to start if you're looking for, okay, what's something different that, you know, we haven't heard about or that we haven't seen yet? This is a great place to start.
Again, our number 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org. Here's an email from Michael who says, we stopped going to the theaters because of the cost. I think our last trip to the theater cost our family of four $50 before we got to the concession stand. Besides the novelty of being able to order a gallon of soda and a bucket of popcorn that could serve as temporary housing. Oh, thanks, Michael. Theaters don't seem to offer a lot of value, especially if you consider that I can stream a movie for less than $6. Strangely, my six-year-old wanted to go to the movies on her seventh birthday. This is something I know you guys want to talk about. Tom, I'm going to go to you first. So movies have, I don't know, The Empire Strikes Back, pardon the pun. Movie theaters, traditional theaters, have tried to make it more experiential, like this little girl who, take me to the cinema, Dad.
Sure. And again, it's trying to get, we all have limited dollars out there. And so I don't mean to denigrate any of these industries about just making it just about money, but there really is obviously the attraction. Movie theaters have to make money in order to survive. Particularly, and when the listener mentioned, referenced the cost of it at concessions, that's where theaters make the vast majority of their funds. For the first week or two, 95 to 100% of the box office dollar goes immediately back to the studios. And so theaters aren't seeing any revenue from that. So they make their money off concessions. And so I think they have to find venues of creating the huge value from getting your popcorn and your large soda and everything together, renting theaters out for parties, or just making it an experience. And if you take a look at the lobbies anymore, you don't tend to have individual movie theaters, kind of like our Colonial down in Keene, where there's just one screen.
Which is and beautiful.
So it's a wonderful venue, but there's only the one screen. And so they're stuck to that. We're seeing, obviously, and this isn't anything new, the sixplexes and the eightplexes and the 20plexes, where you can go and see any number of movies. But when you walk in, it's a spectacle. And so I think you have to make it exciting, either for us or for the kids.
Well, and the reclining seats, Amy,
sure.
Right? And that's comfy. And so, you know, they have tried to make it a little nicer.
Oh, absolutely. And liquor for the adults. They've added that, too.
So, all right. Well, we'll pick up on that after a short break. Michael, thank you for the email. I love his comment about buckets that you could use for housing. So I appreciate that, Michael. We'll talk more about how streaming services have disrupted the traditional movie industry, how the movie industry has responded, shifted, and changed. And coming up, we'll start playing some clips from some of those Oscar-nominated movies. So you won't want to miss that. Keep it right here. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Some say love is in the air, but maybe it's time to say goodbye to your old ride. If you've been wanting to break up with your car or truck, why not donate it to NHPR? We'll turn it into the programs you love, like Morning Edition, Fresh Air, and All Things Considered. Breaking up is really not hard to do. Just go to nhpr.org/cardonation.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, movies in an age of streaming. As the Oscars roll around, streaming services like Netflix and Amazon are making a bigger-than-ever mark on award season. We're taking a look at the year's most talked-about films, who made them, and how streaming is changing the way we watch and what we get to watch. Send us an email. We'd love your observations, questions, comments. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press and its movie reviewer, Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. He formerly worked in the film and comic book industry. And both of you, before we jump into the Oscars, who got nominated for what, how those streaming services are playing a role in shaking up the Oscars. Let's go back to our listeners for just a moment. Andrew in Hopkinton says, I just updated my Comcast service. I was able to change to a plan that includes my Netflix into my cable and internet plan. The Comcast rep said that they are looking at updating their offered plans to better reflect how people watch videos now, streaming versus on-demand, et cetera. Andrew, thank you for that information. I really appreciate it. Again, as someone who likes to watch movies, but it's not really worth it for me to subscribe to 16 different services. Thank you, Andrew. Patrick says, why don't streaming services offer a la carte services, i.e. buying a movie or watching a single sporting event without a monthly subscription? Patrick, thank you. And either of you want to jump in on that question?
Well, you can kind of find that through like iTunes and Amazon. You can still rent movies.
Just like you used to do with the old Blockbuster.
Exactly. You know, that way. But I don't know that everything is available. I don't know that a Netflix original, I don't know how long it takes it to get to, you know, be rentable. Yeah, it's still kind of the Wild West when you want to go find a movie.
Yeah.
Well, I kind of wonder if I'm going to pay $4.99 to rent one movie from Netflix and it's $9.99 for the month. Is that enough of a break? You know, do I only watch one film a month? Probably not.
Right. Although sometimes you think, oh, I'll watch more than one. And then you have a busy
right.
month or somebody gets sick. And lo and behold, you only watched one. So I really appreciate the question, Patrick. Again, you can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or call in 1-800-892-6477. So, Amy, you first. Let's talk about the Oscars, kind of transitioning from our conversation about streaming and how it's shaking things up. How much are these streaming services that are now also producing movies? Again, they used to just distribute stuff. Now they produce their own content as well. How much are they being honored at this year's Academy Awards, Amy, coming up on February 24th?
Well, so a lot of them have different films. You know, there's, as I said, the documentary shorts. But really, to me, the big movie of this year, in fact, one that I think is a serious Best Picture contender, is Roma. And this is one that basically, it was in theaters. I was looking on Wikipedia. It was in a couple of theaters for a few weeks and then was released on Netflix. And that's how most people are seeing it. That's how I saw it at home. So Roma it's in black and white. It's a foreign language film. I think it's a favorite to win that category, too. And it takes place in Mexico City in the 70s. It's a really beautiful movie. And, you know, I think sometimes when you think, oh, foreign language film, I'm going to have to read some subtitles. It has a little bit of a homeworky feel. But it wasn't that at all. It was very engrossing. It is definitely the kind of movie when you watch it, even if you're not in a theater, you know, you're not thinking about the laundry that's in your peripheral vision. You're not thinking about the other things you could be doing. You really get sucked into this movie. It's a director, Alfonso Cuarón, who did Gravity and also Children of Men. So, you know, a serious director that I think he's also probably got a good shot at Best Director.
Wow. So I like the way you put it, a homeworky feel. It doesn't have it. So Roma, again, put out there by Netflix, and that's nominated for Best Picture. So that's a big, big deal, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Netflix wasn't even making movies, I don't know, 5-6 years ago.
And I think it has 10 nominations. It has 2 actor nominations. So this really was, and like I said, I think it's, we were talking before, which do we think is going to win, which would be our pick. And I really think Roma's got a really good shot at winning Best Picture.
Well, and it also won Best Film at the British Academy Film Awards, which is like the British Oscars and a bunch of other awards. How else, Tom, jump in here too, please. How else are streaming services, again, we keep talking about Netflix because it's making the biggest impact, but other streaming services, how are they being felt at this year's Oscars?
I've got both an answer and a question in doing my research that I wasn't really able to answer. My initial answer is I think there's likely less at stake for the streaming services because, you know, it's not a major motion picture that studios have to decide. We've got X number of films that we can produce and that we can get into theaters given any time. We can book into a certain theater. And so they really have to hedge their bets. I think there's, for want of a better term, a little bit less at stake. And so streaming services are able to take more chances, both at trying something new, trying something unique, or appealing to a distinct area of the viewership. And so you can identify some built-in targets and appeal to them. So I think that's one of the things. What I don't understand is, again, if Netflix has taken my only $10 a month and let's say however many streamers they have, the production value, that's what really impresses me in so many of these things, is they're like major motion pictures. So they must be spending $50 million. Where do they get this money? And how do they make that out in subscription services? That's what I couldn't answer, is how they get those funds for that and why it's worth their money, because it certainly must be.
So that's a shakeup, having a Netflix-produced film, a foreign language film, up for Best Picture, which is kind of the big, big nomination that everybody watches. Another shakeup in that category of Best Picture, while we're talking about it, you guys know what I'm going to say. I can tell you there were cheers in my household when this film got nominated in the Best Picture category. Let's hear, and then we'll talk about it.
I waited my entire life for this. The world's going to start over. I'm going to burn it all. What happens now determines what happens to the rest of the world.
Okay, and if you didn't know what that was, Black Panther, the first superhero movie to be nominated for Best Picture, one of the most successful films of the year, features a predominantly black cast, is part of the Marvel Avengers universe, which cranks out a lot of movies. Amy, how big a deal is it that this movie made it to that esteemed category of Best Picture?
Well, I think it's a big deal. It's a huge deal for me. I also cheered when I saw that kick come up. That, you know, if I got to vote, that would be my vote. It's a great movie. It is a great movie all the way across the board, I think. It looks beautiful. It tells a really, you know, fun story. It has a lot of interesting thought behind it in terms of, you know, what countries owe other countries, what you owe the world. There's a lot of deep philosophy that's going on underneath all the super suits and the jumping around. It's a really fun movie, really solid performances. I was a little disappointed not to see some of the performances nominated, especially Michael B. Jordan, who was kind of the voice at the beginning of the trailer there. I really thought he was going to get in, at least him, for supporting his best supporting actor. But just a great movie. And I think it's great that it's broken through. And, you know, we sometimes talk about how there's an Oscar kind of movie. It's the serious drama that's a biopic of some old guy.
Yeah, and why is that, by the way? Like, my teenagers call the Oscars, you know, the award ceremony for movies that no one watches.
Yeah. Well, and I think this proves it doesn't have to be just one kind of movie. One kind of movie isn't an Oscar movie. You know, any good movie can be an Oscar movie. Last year, you know, Get Out was there, and that proved that a great horror movie can
that's
be an Oscar
right.
movie.
That's right. It's a horror movie about, you know, sort of some of the racism that African Americans face.
And so you can bring in any kind of genre, you know, Lady Bird, which was sort of a coming of age movie focused on a young woman, like that can be an Oscar movie. Any movie can be an Oscar movie if it's a great movie.
What do you think, Tom?
The Oscars, I used to say 10 years ago, I would have said that you're right, that people who aren't in the industry don't really care about the Oscars because it was just an in party, an opportunity for everybody to get together and celebrate how great they all were. And so I think they've either expanded their view and their acceptance of different kinds of media, and I think Black Panther might be a good example, both to be a crowd pleaser and also to show that they're less exclusive and just about themselves. I'll get back to saying once again that at the moment you win an Oscar, your box office will increase by 20%. So that's always good as well. And we've seen the nominations for Best Picture expand from 5 to 8. But I agree with Black Panther. I was real happy to see it. And I think I accepted that it was nominated because it's such a spectacle. It's over 2 hours long, and every bit of it is just draws you right in, and it's so wonderful to look at. It was a terrific picture.
But I agree with Amy. It's more thinky than your average, you know, Marvel. I mean, nothing against Marvel, but they make sort of, you know, wham, bam, smash them up, you know, superhero movies, and that's great. But this one was more philosophical, Tom. There was some richness to it.
Sure, and with any, I think, comic book film, you go back to the basic tenets of standard storytelling. It's good versus evil. And it's not just about T'Challa happens to be a black man, but the story is universal to anybody. And I think they were very careful with that storyline to get that across. Amy alluded to the fact that it's talks about how nations need to get together and work together. So it's particularly topical. But ultimately, it gets down to a good versus evil, which I think any viewer can really, you can affiliate with that.
Well, again, shows you how much things have changed to have a superhero movie in that, again, esteemed Best Picture category. Also in the Best Picture category this year, a remake, right? I mean, usually we say a remake, really, but this is A Star is Born, the third remake of this classic story. This one directed by and starring Bradley Cooper with a widely lauded performance by Lady Gaga. Let's just hear a little bit.
You come sing that song that I love.
No, I can't do that.
Here, come on, here we go.
Trust me, it's not funny. Jack.
Look at me. All you gotta do is trust me. That's all you gotta do.
Okay, and the crowd goes crazy. A Star is Born. I have to admit it. I have chills. I also have to admit, Amy, that, you know, could this new remake hold up to, you know, Barbra Streisand, Judy Garland? But most people seem to say, yeah, she kicked it out of the park.
Absolutely. And by the way, if I had been in my car while that was playing, I totally would have been singing along with that. That is one of several movies where I left the theater, I went home, and I bought the soundtrack because I really liked it. You know, I have to be honest, this is my first A Star is Born, so I hadn't seen the other ones going in, and I really loved it. I thought she did a great job, Lady Gaga. This is the first, dramatic performance I've ever seen her in. She did a great job as a very kind of naturalistic actor. Bradley Cooper plays the older singer, who's kind of, his career's kind of on the way down, hers is on the way up. And I thought he did a great job. He also directed, but did not get a directing nomination. It's kind of a big scandal. This, you know, honestly, when this movie came out and I saw it, I thought, this is the movie to beat. Like, they've already got this on all the Oscars, and then people just have to try to fight to get their name off. And it's interesting how, you know, here we are several months later, and it doesn't quite seem like the behemoth that it was when I first saw it.
Yeah. What do you think, Tom?
I think A Star is Born is a great way to tell from what generation everybody is. Because you say A Star is Born, I'm Judy Garland. And even that
for
one
me,
was
it's Barbra Streisand.
Okay. But for Judy Garland, even that one was a remake because there was one earlier. So we've had four of them all together.
Oh, see, I did not know that.
I was dumbfounded. When you say Lady Gaga and this was first coming out, I think of the wild outfits and everything like that. And I know she had a great voice. I thought she was just unbelievable and was just a wonderful. So they just keep... if not getting better. They keep saying being super strong. I thought it was a terrific film. Obviously, you refer to the fact that Cooper didn't get a nomination. This is a film that was able to direct itself. Wasn't that nice? But he was very good, too. And it always amazes me. One of my favorite personal films is Moulin Rouge, and I love seeing when major motion picture stars, we find out, holy cow, they can sing.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fun with Cooper as well.
He was great. Yeah. And, you know, I was also really surprised that we're not talking about Oscar nominee Andrew Dice Clay. He yep. has a small role in this. He plays her father, and he was fantastic. He didn't get a nomination, but I thought he was great. That's not what you expect from Andrew Dice Clay, but it was really well done.
Well, another theme I want to hit with you guys, and that is from 2015, 2016, Oscars So White. And it was a time when people said, whoa, 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 America is a diverse country. Why are all these films that are nominated have, you know, no black actors, no black directors, no black producers? Amy, where have we come from that moment, you know, just 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, so from what I've read, there was a real...
And Asian and Latino, by the way. The critique was not just... that there weren't enough African Americans.
Exactly. And, you know, from what I've read the last few years, they've really made an effort to add new people to the mix of Academy voters, to bring new people into the Academy. And the idea is that you change the makeup of the voting pool and you change what gets in. And maybe that's why we're seeing, you know, like a Black Panther. Maybe that's why we saw Lady Bird and Get Out last year. And so I do think that as you bring... you know, younger people, people from different areas of the film world into the voting academy, you will see more movies like Black Panther, like Black Klansman, like Roma, you know, movies that kind of reach different audiences and include different actors.
Black Klansman came out a while ago, maybe 5, 6, 7 months ago.
In the summer sometime,
yeah,
I think.
But a Spike Lee movie, you know, who's been in the business for a long time, very successful. Let's just hear a little bit from this movie in case folks have kind of forgotten what that's about. This is, again, about a black police officer in the 70s who attempts to infiltrate the KKK with the help of a Jewish officer. So let's just hear a little bit.
The KKK is planning an attack.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
We'll establish contact over the phone.
We'll need a white officer to play me when they meet face to face.
So there becomes a combined...
Ron Stallworth.
Can you do that?
With the right white man, we can do anything.
And who plays that right white man, Tom? It's
I don't recall.
That was Adam Driver.
That's it.
Okay, right.
And who was also in the Star Wars.
Yes,
movie.
Exactly.
Yeah, he was great.
The sullen evil guy. Yeah, the Star Wars movie. And he actually has a supporting actor nomination for this movie. And then the lead is John David Washington,
right.
Denzel Washington's son, who I think
guy
to watch.
He was terrific. What surprised me so much about this, because it sounds like if you either read the bylines and everything or even watch the trailers, oh, it's going to be so serious and it's going to be such in your face about race. It was really funny, too. And I thought this was Spike at his strongest.
All right. Well, speaking of movies that feature, you know, actors from different racial and ethnic backgrounds, I do want to ask both of you about a movie that tackled those topics, but I think it got a nomination for Best Picture, but now it's come under some criticism. I'm talking about Green Book, Amy Diaz. This is about the relationship between a black pianist, Dr. Don Shirley, played by Mahershala Ali, and his white driver, Tony Lip. I just want to play a little bit from this movie and then ask you guys why this has gotten praise, but also a lot of criticism.
Some guy called over here, a doctor. He's looking for a driver. You interested?
I am not a medical doctor. I'm a musician. I'm about to embark on a concert tour in the Deep South. What other experience do you have?
Public relations.
Do you foresee any issues in working for a black man?
You and the Deep South, there's going to be problems.
Okay, so that's a scene from Green Book. And Amy, can you just... give us a little bit of the reason why people are having some problems with this sort of interracial buddy movie.
Well, so the person who plays the piano player is Mahershala Ali, and he gives a fantastic performance. But his character is not the central character in the movie, nor is this movie called Green Book really about the Green Book, which was an actual guide used by African-American motorists back in the, like, 40s and 60s, 40s through 60s. And so... the things that you think would be the focus of this movie are not the focus of this movie. And I think that's the part where people start to think, okay, but so why is the Viggo Mortensen character, the lead of this movie that should be about Mahershala Ali character or this Green Book phenomenon.
Okay, real interesting. We will talk a lot more after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, the State House once again debates marijuana legalization in the wider context this time of the rest of New England moving in that direction. That's tomorrow on The Exchange, so join us for that. This hour, it's a look at the Academy Awards coming up later this month with an eye to how much the movie industry has changed, both due to criticism of the Oscars and the Academy themselves, but also the disruptive influence of streaming services like Netflix and Amazon and so forth. We'd love your thoughts and questions. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. So both of you, I'll start with you, Tom. You know, we talked a lot about the Best Picture category because that's the one that, you know, sort of headlines this whole thing.
Sure.
And some of the unusual movies, the different movies that are in that category this year. What else are you going to be looking at in 2 weeks' time?
Well, I'll throw out one comment that I'm wondering where in the world, at the beginning of the year, as they were coming across, I was figuring if I had to put my money down on it, boy, we'd see an Oscar nod for Three Identical Strangers and Won't You Be My Neighbor, two documentaries that I thought were just terrific. And so I have to kind of ask, what's the Academy thinking about? Again, all the other ones that they nominated were terrific. RBG, I think, will likely be the runaway. But I was missing those. Ultimately, I think I've seen a lot of these, and so I don't really have a horse in this race. Sometimes it's nice. Sometimes there's one film that I'm really behind, and so I get and I'm watching the Oscars, and I'm all torn up and anxious about it. And this is one where it's such a nice variety, and it's an eclectic choice that I don't really have a horse in the race. So I'm going to sit back, and I always have my picks, and I see how well I do, and I usually am lucky to get half of them right.
Well, and you mentioned documentaries, and that feeds into something that Amy said earlier, that because of this revolution in streaming, you can get all sorts of, I don't want to call them niche-y, but, you know, films that are not big screen type films, you can get them. And that in turn encourages producers to produce them, as you said earlier, Tom. So I wonder if more people, Amy, will be watching that best documentary category this year, whereas in years past, it might have been like, yeah, that's for people who, you know, live in big cities and can see all this stuff at arty movie houses.
Exactly. You know, I think it does make those categories, documentary, feature, foreign language film, the shorts. I mean, the shorts are currently playing at theaters around New Hampshire, mm-hmm. Red River Theaters here in Concord. I think the Music Hall out in Portsmouth, I think maybe Keene has.
Colonial showing.
So, you know, even the shorts are kind of relevant to people. And, you know, one cool thing, if you really get into this, you watch all the Oscar films and you want more ideas, search for the Oscar, the shortlists. So these are before the nominees are announced in certain categories like foreign film, documentary, the shorts, they have kind of a semi-finalist round of maybe 9 or 10 films, you know, in those categories. So you can go back and find some of those. I know the shortlist for the documentaries had some more of those films that I thought would definitely wind up here. So, you know, when you're looking around on a Saturday night, what can we watch? And you watched all the documentaries. There's some more ideas. Look for the Oscar shortlist.
Do you want to jump in, Tom?
Nope, I agree.
Okay. All right. Lots of commentary from our listeners. This is from Jeff. Getting back to our earlier conversation about, yes, there's more there. Yes, there's more being produced to satisfy all kinds of audiences. But, how many subscriptions can you afford? So Jeff says, I have recently canceled my cable completely. I use exclusively Netflix and Hulu. Jeff says, I am not a huge TV watcher, but with the two platforms, I have more than enough, Jeff says, to keep me occupied for ages. Let's also not forget people share passwords, and Netflix and Hulu allow for multiple user profiles, so the cost is free for the rest of my family. In my opinion, no question about the worth. I watch shows and movies in Spanish, French, even in Hebrew, and they allow us to explore a more worldly appreciation of art. Jeff, thank you so much. I'm not sure how the companies, Tom, would feel about, hey, share your password with 16 of your best friends, but within families, people do share passwords.
Oh, absolutely. My well, I won't say who is using my, but the listener is right that the companies are not the cable companies, but the streaming companies are aware of how this is going, and so they are starting to say, "Look, you pay your monthly subscription, you got four viewing services or people who can log on to it," and I think that's fair. One of the things that I recall is that I'm seeing a lot more specific channels, both on cable and on streaming services, being created because of a lot of nature channels being created, a lot of sci-fi channels being created with brand new media because of this streaming services. And so, you know, ultimately, I kind of wonder, I know Hollywood is probably running scared because the only way we used to be able to see this was going to the theaters, and now so much of it is at home. So I think in the next, I think this will be a very different conversation we have 10 years from now as to how we watch movies.
Yeah, well, thank you for that email. I really appreciate the point. Lots of good questions from our listeners today. So thank you. Keep them coming in. exchange@nhpr.org. Chip says, I am old school. I still get my Netflix through the mail. Better selection. And you can get DVDs at your local library for free. Chip, I want to tell you, one of my sons decided, I don't know, it was a bad weekend or he had a cold or something. He said, let's binge watch Rocky films. Couldn't find him here, couldn't find him there, couldn't find him on Netflix, Comcast, whatever. And he said, he's 19, he said, Mom, let's go to the library. I said, wow, okay, good idea. So there you go, Chip. Thank you very much. Nancy says, Tom's insight into how important concession stand sales are to theaters made me think how old school concession stands are. I live in Keene, love to support the Colonial, but rarely purchase food or drink there. I believe we are all becoming more health conscious, and I, for one, would appreciate healthy options at the concession stand. Thank you, Nancy, for that. Not all of us want to, you know, eat Almond Joy or, you know, dive into a 10-foot bucket of popcorn. Go ahead, Amy.
Well, you know, as someone who eats way too much movie theater popcorn, I will say there are actually, you see healthier options sort of sneaking into a lot of theaters. A lot of theaters have really, I think, to go to that, you know, more of an experience feel, they're expanding their concessions. There's a lot more chicken tenders and, okay, that's not the healthiest thing ever. But there are, you know, a lot of them have like sort of protein snack packs, kind of like what you might send, you know, with your kids to school.
For just $5.
Well, I mean, right, exactly. Yes, none
with
of it
three
is,
bites of food.
None of it's a bargain. I'll say that. But yeah, they're definitely expanding. You know, for me, I'm always like, what theater has coffee? And you're able to find coffee at more theaters now. I definitely think they want to, you know, bring in more people and find more ways to get you to spend money while you're there. Again, to make it more of a like an exciting day out or an exciting night out and not just going to see movies because you can do that at home.
Well, we talked earlier about, again, Oscars So White, the controversy, the Academy, trying to open things up to a much more diverse array of not just characters, but directors and writers and music producers. There's another movie that got some acclaim this year. It's just a fun movie. But it also features an all-Asian cast. This is Crazy Rich Asians, based on a best-selling book, the highest-grossing romantic comedy in a decade. I want to play a little bit from this movie. It's about Rachel Chu. She's a Chinese-American woman who goes home with her boyfriend, Nick, to meet his extremely wealthy Singaporean family. Let's hear.
Nick, we can't afford this. These pajamas are fancier than any of my real clothes.
My family has business with the airline. The tickets, they're a perk.
What kind of business?
Real estate, investment, other things. Nothing interesting. Dim sum.
So your family is, like, rich?
We're comfortable.
That is exactly what a super rich person would say.
Okay, so you can't see it because we're on the radio, but in that trailer, she is on a plane with Nick going to Singapore to meet his parents for the first time. And it's basically, I don't know, a very nice cocktail lounge. I mean, they don't look like they're on an airplane. Let's put it that way. They're in their sort of own little private suite and everything is white and gorgeous and there's champagne and so forth. What do you think about this movie, Amy, and sort of what it represents in the industry today?
Well, it is a classic romantic comedy. It is beautiful people. They're in a beautiful location. As she said about, like, these pajamas are fancier than any of my real clothes. Like, everything is fancier than
anybody's.
Best costume. Exactly. Everything is fancier than everything. The food is delicious. I spent spend a lot of time looking at, there's a scene where they just go and eat street food, and you're just watching beautiful people eat delicious looking food.
It's probably great for Singapore, right?
And I thought, well, this is fine. I can watch, you know, I can watch whatever they're eating, looks fantastic. So that's what it felt like. Of course it's going to do great, because we haven't seen a romantic comedy like this. The classic romantic comedy, beautiful people, beautiful places, you know, having a very mild kind of romantic problems. You know, they're going to, spoiler alert, you know, these two are meant to be. it was a fun movie. I really enjoyed it.
Well, and, you know, I work in a very serious business, so I'm sure I've told you guys before, when I go to the movies, I like to see something fun. Tom, how surprising is it that a really fun, pretty, you know, cotton candy movie like this has actually gotten some acclaim?
I think that's one of the things that surprised the industry so much, was how popular this was. But it falls back to what Amy referred to. It's again a universal story. Yes, it happens to be about Asian families, but it's about coming home and dealing with mom and your parents liking the person that you're in love with. And it's a terrific travel. You mentioned the fact that we get to see all sorts of wonderful new venues and things. I think it had everything going for it. Terrific performances, very smart dialogue and script, and a travelogue that is really pretty to look at. You can never bank on beforehand, before you release it, saying this is going to be a big hit. But I think this had everything going for it.
I have to talk about another movie that generated a little bit of controversy. We talked earlier about Green Book and how that's come under some criticism. Another movie that, again, was nominated, I think, for Best Picture. I've got the whole list in front of me, Bohemian Rhapsody. Mm-hmm. When that first came out, people said, wow, this is awesome, this is amazing, great performances. And then what happened, Amy? It all kind of fell apart.
Well, I would disagree with some of that. I thought it had a really great performance. Rami Malek did a really good Freddie Mercury. And this movie basically follows Freddie Mercury from kind of when he joins Queen until the Live Aid concert. And it does a really good job recreating that concert.
And the teeth.
The Queen,
there's
yes.
There's a lot of talk about how they got him to have big teeth.
And then, you know, you're listening to Queen music and you're like, hey, Queen music is great. Like, I forgot how great these songs are. This was one where I left the theater. I'm like, okay, where are those CDs? I got to find them. but the rest of the movie, it's almost a parody of what you think a musical biography is going to be. It hits all those, you know, they get some stardom, and then there's the dark period. It reminded me of the movie Dewey Cox that starred John C. Reilly from a few years ago, that was a straight up parody of that kind of behind the music art movie. This felt like that.
So they really didn't try hard enough, maybe.
It was, well, so there's all sorts of controversy involved in the making of it. The director was, I guess, fired towards the end. And so
he got in trouble for making comments.
In the end, it's like, how did this movie come together? Did the person putting it together have all of the things that they wanted to tell the story that they wanted? To me, the movie was a mess with one good performance in it and a lot of great music.
Do you want to jump in, Tom?
I was struck with the fact that, because I grew up during this era, and so when you said Queen to me beforehand, I think, oh yeah, they were okay. And what I was struck with after the film was they'd keep playing a song and I would think, that's a great song. I forgot about that. That's a great song. I forgot about that. But I think Amy's right that it's a balancing act between giving the audience what they want to see, just kind of a traditional story, and so all of the points that they're expecting to see, and then going a little cliche. And I thought this bordered on the cliche.
All right. Well, again, the number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. We're talking about the movie business because the Oscars are coming up in a couple weeks. So we're looking at how this industry has been shaken up by streaming services and also just how things have changed, gotten opened up, more diverse because of some of the criticism that came out a few years ago. By the way, just to clarify, so the director of that movie about Bohemian Rhapsody, the director, Bryan Singer, was accused of sexually assaulting underage boys. Young men when they were underage. So right. That's that. And I don't want to end on a negative note, so I'm going to ask you this quickly. But Amy, you know, speaking of people making comments and having, you know, allegations against them, the guy who was supposed to host the Oscars in 2 weeks got booted. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, and so I think this this Oscar ceremony is going to be really interesting, possibly a complete mess. So there's no host.
Wait. How do they do that? Well, how do you have no host?
Well, so I don't
I'll
know.
I'll do it. I'm a host.
You should call them because they might want you. I actually read somewhere, I think on something called CheatSheet.com, that the last one was the 1989 Oscars had no host. And that was the Oscars with the infamous Rob Lowe and Snow White musical number. So who knows what we're in for
how
at
do you
this
do it without
Oscars?
A host?
I don't know. I get, you know, okay. I guess you have people come out and do something in the beginning and then they just kind of, you know, a voice, a narrator just keeps the show moving, I guess. And it's supposed to be shorter. Some awards might be given out during commercial. This really could be just a crazy ceremony.
Well, and I think I heard that, correct me if I'm wrong, that they're thinking, in order to make it shorter, because that's been the criticism, to take out some of the clips of movies that are nominated. That's my favorite part because
yeah.
I don't have time to go to all of these movies, but I love seeing the clips. And then I think, oh, maybe I will go to that one. That's the best part as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and I think they did that in past years. They took out clips and then they added them back. I think I heard they were going to just cut it down to 2 original songs being played and now it's 5 again.
Right. That's my, and I'm going to offend a lot of people out there, but that's my personal quirk is all of the songs. I know the songs, I can listen to them. Cut those and save half an hour.
Okay, the performances. Now, some people say it's all about the songs,
right.
You know, even though for me it's all about the clips. I got to say, guys, you know, this is Hollywood we're talking about, Tom. Their business is to put on a show.
Sure.
Why are they having such a hard time putting on a show? That's what they do.
Well, you're right. I have to fall back on also. Are you talking about with the length
general,
of the songs?
Just in general, the host, they have to boot the host.
Right.
Then they're not sure where to play clips. Then they're going to give some of the award during commercials. Hello? I mean, that's not really fair.
What if
you're the person who wins?
I'd ask him to still wheel out Johnny Carson, even if he's not alive anymore. I love Johnny. But yeah,
why is this so difficult? Why are they struggling so much to put on a show? That's what they do.
I think it always used to be just the big party, the self-aggrandizing party. And now they're realizing, and this isn't a negative comment, but both in the nominations, but and also this show themselves, that there's a larger spectacle. If you have a billion people watching, it's more socially conscious, I think. And so they want to make sure that the star that they are saying, this is the leader of the Oscars, doesn't have terribly negative connotations associated with them.
Okay. Well, Hollywood, if you need a host.
Good luck.
Laura's available.
Roll dice.
Just kidding. What do you think, Amy? What are you going to be looking forward to on February 24th?
Well, we were talking before. I'm definitely rooting for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
I think we were talking about
what a great movie.
We didn't talk about that. Yeah, I heard
that
was fantastic.
Animated feature. Such a fun movie. That's a good, if your kids are middle school and older, great family movie, too.
Yeah, I did not see that. And my husband came home. He saw it and he said, you need to see it. And I will go again. That's how good it was.
I might actually go again. I might actually see it in 3D, which I normally avoid. But.
All right. Well, this has been just a blast. And
thank you so much for
being here. Amy Diaz, editor of the Hippo Press, its movie reviewer. Tom Cook, film professor at Keene State College. Both of you, thanks a lot.
Really appreciate it.
The Exchange is a production of NHPR. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Our new producer is Ali Oshinsky. Thanks for listening. I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.